Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Nunes' hands are down, and she's walking Ronda down. She tags her again.
Over and over, Amanda Nunes.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another. But I'm going to get the job done.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Often imitated but never duplicated, 37, make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Of course, I am your humble host. I'm also a four-time Golden Glove champion and an award-winning boxing writer. Supposedly, I know something about boxing, you know, in its history, right? But you, the average boxing fan, you probably know more. So I'm going to open up the toll-free right now, give you this opportunity at the top of the hour. If you want to join us, you can. The number, 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. That is the listener viewer line. Of course, we come to you live on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 217. Of course, the live TV broadcast, the stream, is live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, and that's how we're rocking and rolling. In fact, we expect this stream broadcast to expand in the next few weeks like to unparalleled heights. Straight up, you're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV. Of course, boxing last night, former WBC super welterweight champion, 154-pound champion, Tony Harrison, and a guy by the name of Bryant Goodfella Perriola engaged in a 12-round draw. 12-round draw, so a lot of people thought Perriola won. Might have got a short decision. The judges were 116-112 for Harrison. That's 8-4 in rounds. But one judge saw it 9-3 in rounds for the other guy. And then one judge called it even. So bottom line is the fight was a draw. We'll see if they rematch. Of course, Tony Harrison not carrying the fire he once had at 154 pounds. Our guests today will include the HBO Godfather, retired HBO Godfather, Mr. Larry Merchant, Mauricio Sulaiman, president of the World Boxing Council, and Coach John Johnson, the man that plotted the demise of Mike Tyson when Buster Douglas knocked him out in Tokyo. Straight up, that and more on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Sounds of the Tower of Power, of course, www.towerofpower.com. Check them out. They've been making the funk for like 50 years now. Their new LP, 50 Years of Soul and Funk. Check them out. They are happening. Towerofpower.com. Straight up, we await the retired HBO Godfather Larry Merchant. Of course, I'm looking at this Showtime schedule. Showtime, man, they're doing boxing. Of course, May 15th, Luis Neri and Brian Figueroa for the WBC 122-pound title fight. There's a couple of fights underneath there as well. May 29th, Showtime Championship Boxing coming with Nordine Outball against Nonito Donaire, of course, the kid from across the bay. That's the WBC 118-pound title. June 18th, Showtime's going to go with Jermall Charlo, of course, the WBC middleweight title holder against Juan Montiel. And, of course, the 26th, Showtime going to go with pay-per-view, Gervonta Davis and Mario Barrios. Of course, they're going to hook it up for a couple of belts, I believe. Of course, good-looking fighter, Davis, when he's in the ring. You know, he has his problems outside the ring. Of course, right now he's got like 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 felonies against him. Some grand jury indicted him for leaving the scene of an accident a couple of months ago. So the bottom line is he's in trouble, but I think Floyd Mayweather will bail him out with a slave contract. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing. Back to the Showtime Boxing schedule, of course. July 3rd, day before, that's the Saturday night before the 4th of July. Chris Colbert versus Yuri Gamboa for the WBA Super Featherweight title. Are they still retro? Are they still? What are they? Why, they keep recycling Yuri Gamboa. I don't get it. I mean, he hasn't won a decent fight or a major fight in a long time. Maybe since Castro was alive. No. Fidel Castro. I kid you, he's Cuban. Anyway, the kid had defected not once but twice. Get this. He defected the first time to Brazil. So he defects to Brazil, and he's living life in this hotel. And he's eating all this food. He's got, you know, going banquets. I mean, the kid's really living large because he expects all this money from Luis de Cubas and the guys down there in Florida to come down and, you know, get him out of Brazil. Anyway, the Brazilian said, guess what? You ain't paid our bills. We're throwing you out. They went him back to Brazil. Of course, he would defect a second time. Of course, and, you know, the second time obviously was successful. July 17th, as I said, Charlo, the other Charlo's coming back, Jermall Charlo, undisputed IBF, WBA, WBC, and WBO, 154-pound world junior middleweight unification match with Brian Castano. The 14th Showtime comes back again. Guillermo Rigondeaux, another guy that's been exiled from or left Cuba. Pretty good-looking fighter at 122. Going to fight at 118. Good luck on that one. An old man dropping weight. Whoa. Anyway, he's taking on John Casimero. The 28th Showtime is going to go with David Benavidez, one of my favorite fighters. Of course, when he's not sniffing blow. Anyway, undefeated, of course, out of Central California, I believe. Of course, the WBC super middleweight champion at one point in time. But, you know, coke and had some problems and this and that. Didn't make weight for a fight. Of course, had some issues as far as his training was concerned. The bottom line is he is focused and he is slated for the 28th on Showtime Championship Boxing against a guy by whose last name is going to be hell, Jose Uz Category. Okay, and the 11th, 9/11, Showtime comes back with a card. Stephen Fulton, the junior versus the winner of the Neri Figueroa bout. That's a super bantamweight world title fight. That's going to be a unification match. So Showtime's got some things going on. Why in the hell isn't HBO doing anything? To that, I asked the HBO godfather, Larry Merchant. Larry, Showtime's still rocking. How come HBO can't?
Well, maybe Showtime is still rocking because HBO got out of the game.
Okay. Good point.
I have no idea. It's another life for me, HBO.
Okay, but that's I'm sorry.
And, you know, everybody wants to be Netflix and stream and make people pay for what they used to get free. That's just the nature of business and how things evolve.
You know, Larry, a guy fought last night. He appeared on TV on pay-per-view, a guy by the name of Jake Paul, some YouTube type of guy. It's pretty sad when they're putting fraudulent fighters in main events. I mean, he knocked out a guy that's never fought before. He's only fought three times himself. I mean, P.T. Barnum, I mean, his greatest line was, there's a sucker born every minute. If you bought that pay-per-view last night, you have to assume you're a sucker. I mean, you know, the guy lasted like 90 seconds.
Well, they get what they pay for, and maybe it gives them something to talk about. They're not diehard world boxing fans. They're out for some sensation. Just look at all these exhibitions that are piling up and that some people think are real, or they don't care. They just want to look at an old hero. Whatever floats their boat, and maybe it's we'll look back and say, well, it was filler material until things normalized and the fight game along with it.
Okay, I got a question for you. The June 4th, I think, under the Teofimo Lopez title offense, going to be Kevin McBride and Evander Holyfield. The last time I saw Kevin McBride, he was beaten up on the carcass of Mike Tyson in Washington, D.C. I think we were at Howard University or something like that. But outside of that, you know, I don't remember a whole lot out of Kevin McBride. I think that he couldn't have won the Golden Gloves on a good day here in San Francisco. So he and Holyfield are going to fight. Do you think it's okay for two old guys to fight each other?
Well, there are supposed to be medical commissions that decide whether they're in reasonable enough shape, and the rules are often bent to accommodate older fighters, and some fans get a kick out of it.
You know, which brings me to thinking about 1980. Muhammad Ali is trying to get a boxing license in Las Vegas, Nevada to fight Larry Holmes. Of course, he would go down finally October 2nd, 1980, and that was a terrible day in boxing history. Ali being stopped in the 10th round after not winning a minute. Anyway, the Mayo Clinic, he went to the Mayo Clinic to be examined, did Muhammad Ali pre-fight, and he couldn't touch his finger to his nose, and the Nevada Commission gave him a license. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes dollars and cents, and commissions are not just there to regulate the sport. They're there to promote the sport, to justify their being. And so they will look the other way if there are enough dollars and cents on the table.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. Another old fighter appeared on TV last night, and I think he worked some broadcast fights with him. I mean, as far as him being on a broadcast team, maybe. Oscar De La Hoya. He was Oscar De La drunk last night. He embarrassed himself, Godfather. I mean, doesn't anybody tell these guys? I mean, you and I know we don't go on the air buzzed because, you know, things happen. But he went on the air really buzzed.
Well, I think we have to remind ourselves that fighters felt most alive when they were fighting. And if you're Oscar De La Hoya and you're looking around and guys are making seven, eight figures for showing up, you say, well, why can't I have a piece of that? I'm not justifying it, mm-hmm. but I understand it. And you couldn't get me to watch an advertisement on the game, on those matches, much less the matches themselves.
You know, Oscar, I was his first publicist. A lot of people don't know that. But back in 1989, 1990, this rich guy up here in Northern California, some developer named Carl DeMay, hired me and says, I want you to be the publicist for this kid. I said, this kid? He goes, yeah, his name is Oscar De La Hoya. So, you know, I started calling him on the phone. He was a good amateur and this and that, like 1989. And his mother would answer the phone, telefono, Oscar! And, you know, we talk and this and that. So he was just a kid. And I watched him grow up and mature and this and that. And at one point in time, I said to myself, God, he seems to really have both of his feet on the ground. Then sex and cocaine got involved. And from that point forward, Oscar's sort of been like a lost cause.
Well, but at the same time, he's the only prize fighter I know of who set up a promotional company that had some pretty good successes. When you get famous and rich at a young age and you're looking for higher highs, as we've noted, a lot of young fighters go off the track.
I could no doubt about that. Oscar, of course, the 1992 Olympic gold medalist. Hard to believe it was that long ago. 1992 Olympic gold medalist, of course, beat Chavez the first time back in 1996. I can go on and on and on. Of course, the big fight is. I think the pinnacle for Oscar as a boxer was beating Fernando Vargas that night, especially seeing Vargas was on those steroids.
I think that was a good night. Oscar, to his credit, fought everybody. You didn't hear about him ducking this guy or that guy. He lost some fights to some elite fighters, but he fought everybody. And he's an important figure historically in the sport because he was, the way he looked, the way he was marketed as a crossover star, how many people loved him. I think I've told you the story of being in a taxi in Barcelona and the guy had some little boxing gloves hanging from a hook and my wife asked him, who are your favorite fighter? Oscar De La Hoya in Barcelona, Spain. So he was a lightning presence in the game and he fought some damn good fights.
Hell
and
yeah.
He was a damn good fighter.
Yep.
Maybe not the greatest of the greats, but he was a damn good fighter who put on entertaining fights.
You know, when I watched him in the amateurs, he was beating up guys like John Montez, who was like world-ranked at 140 pounds, and like lighting them up in the gym. I mean, lighting them up. And he was lighting them up to the point where I would say to myself, this is a combination of Alexis Arguello because of the frame and Duran because he was so fierce and he threw combinations. I mean, just from the start, Godfather, you knew Oscar was going to be a stud. You knew it.
Well, he had star quality, and he lived up to it.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, the Godfather, retired HBO Godfather, Larry Merchant, will stick around just for a minute. We thank him for his time. Of course, Ring Talk Live Worldwide, this is the Sunday edition coming to 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and, of course, live on Twitch.tv. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
I'm ready to get up and do my thing. I want to get into it, man, you know. Like a sex machine, man. Moving, doing it, you know. Can I count it off? One, two, three, four. Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Stay on the scene.
Get on up.
Like a sex machine.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Wow! I feel good.
We check back in with the Godfather real quick. Larry, I got a question for you before I went to the commercial break. How's COVID working out? I mean, what are you doing? Is life changing the last week? We both got vaccinated. Do you think life is, can we go back to life as normal soon?
I think we're getting there. I don't know that we're there yet, but all the indicators suggest that normal life is just gradually returning.
Well, that's
maybe by the end of the summer. I don't know. It's a little above my pay grade, but yes, things are changing.
You know, I'll leave you with this. People in the old folks' home, of course, the were elderly, were like going left and right, and now they've been vaccinated, and the COVID cases in nursing homes across the country where they've been vaccinated has dropped 100%. So, I mean, yikes! That's fantastic news. The vaccine works.
Yeah, the vaccines, the different vaccines. Yeah, it's been a heroic effort. There are some places like Michigan and some countries where variations of the plague are still threatening, but by and large, it seems to be that it's plateauing, if not plunging.
Well, with that, Godfather, I wish you and the Godmother a very, very wonderful week. When are you guys moving?
Oh, maybe not till the end of May.
Okay.
We're trying to figure out how we're going to put a house worth of accumulated stuff into an apartment that's half the size. We'll find out. We'll have an estate sale. We'll give away stuff to play the next game.
Well, give me the first crack at that stuff. Anyway, kiss the Godmama. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Pedro, as always.
The greatest, folks, the HBO retired Godfather. I'm talking about Mr. Larry Merchant. And, of course, last night on pay-per-view, if you can believe this or not, Jake Paul, now 3-0, 3 KOs. But who has he fought? I mean, he fought Ben Askren. Ben Askren's claim to fame is being knocked out in like 7 seconds in the UFC. I mean, the quickest knockout in UFC history. He didn't get knocked out in quick, like, record history last night. I think he lasted like 90 seconds or something like that. But he got knocked out. What did you expect? He had never picked up a boxing glove before in his life. He was a wrestler. He wasn't even a fighter, per se. An MMA fighter. He was more like, they used to call what he did, dirty wrestling, where he would roll around on guys and get them tired, and he'd get them tired, and then he'd beat them up, okay? But outside of that, Ben Askren is nothing. Anyway, Jake Paul now, on pay-per-view, I'm going to bring this up with Mauricio Sulaimán in hour number two. Of course, Larry just talked about it, about these freaks and things like that. These guys, he's not a boxer. And it ruins the game when people like this do this, because eventually he's going to have to face somebody of note, and anybody that can really fight or spell fight can lick him like a stamp. Okay, I watched some of the fundamentals he has. He doesn't have any. He doesn't. I mean, he couldn't win the Golden Gloves here. Speaking of winning the Golden Gloves, he wasn't the only guy in the car that couldn't fight. I mean, outside of beating Ben Askren, that's his claim to fame. Regis Progress is on the card. He can fight a little bit, 26-1, 21 KOs. Of course, a six-round technical decision over Ivan Redkoch, 23-6, 18 KOs. It was a body shot. There was some question about whether it was low. The guy was taken from the ring on a stretcher, and then maybe he was acting it out, but the scorecards had Regis up 60-54 twice and 59-54. In other words, he was way ahead and dominating. Former Cruiserweight champion, I think it was U.S. Marine, too, as well. Of course, I'm talking about Steve Cunningham. 30 wins, nine losses and a draw, 13 whacks, a six-round unanimous decision win over USC legend, former champion Frank Mir. Frank Mir has been on the show in the past. He saw my wall of fame outside here at the Sports Byline Studios here in San Francisco. So we've had Frank on the show a few times in the past. And, you know, Frank's like 45 years old now, 46, somewhere around there. Anyway, bottom line is he lost almost every round. He did lose every round, except on one judge's scorecard. He got two rounds were called even. Bottom line is he wasn't in danger of being stopped, but Frank Mir, former UFC champion, trying to do his thing as far as a professional boxer is concerned. It's a different world. Why can't guys realize that? It's a different world. You can't kick somebody and you can't elbow them. You can't choke them. You can't choke them. I mean, you know, you can't choke them. Anyway, I mentioned this a little earlier. Former WBC 154-pound champion Tony Harrison. They call him Super Bad. Maybe a couple of years ago, but he's sort of like super done. I'm looking at him at 154. Looks like he's dying to make the weight, not being able to put forth the effort, throw the punches in order to win the fight decisively. Last night's fight was a draw. I mentioned earlier, of course, Harrison now 28-3-1, 21 KOs, and Bryant Perriella now 17-3 with one draw and 14 whacks. 117-111 for Perriella. 116-112 for Harrison. Wow. One judge saw it 8-4 one way. One judge saw it 9-3 the other way. That's a big swing in the judges. That's a huge swing. I mean, you've got to sit down and see who was right there and who was wrong. Because obviously, somebody was right and somebody was wrong. You can't have it both ways. You can't. And of course, the one judge called it 114-114. That made it a draw. Of course, boxing upcoming. Oh, and Demetrius Andrade was a winner. Of course, the WBO 160-pound champion. Still undefeated now. They call him Boo-Boo. I call him Boo-Boo because he was a mistake. I mean, they keep giving him vacant titles, the 154-pound WBO title. Okay, you give him one title, I understand. Then you give him a WBO vacant title at 160. Oh, you know. And then he fights guys like Liam Williams. And, you know, Williams had some moments there. And at the end of the day, Mr. Andrade didn't have it in the tank. Didn't look like he had the stamina to go 12 rounds to be strong. He was lagging in parts of the fight, okay? But he won at the end. Decisions were like pretty long. The scores were pretty long as far as him winning. But at the end of the day, he did nothing to improve his stock. I mean, Eddie Hearn keeps saying, this guy, we can't get fights for him. Because he's not, he talks a better game than he fights than he fights. And when you have guys that talk better games than they fight, and they really don't put forth, his effort wasn't one where he said, you know, I want to see that guy fight again. I mean, I saw that fight last night. You know, I want to see Boo-Boo fight again. No, you don't want to see Boo-Boo fight again. Not based on last night's fight, you wouldn't want to. But not based on any of his recent fights, you wouldn't want to. So what am I trying to tell you? The O doesn't matter if you're fighting, you know, not too up championship guys. I mean, he's fighting a lot of guys that are like, okay, but they were at 154. He's fighting guys coming up from 154. The bottom line is he's got to find what he's really made of at 160. Will he? I don't know. I think he should take on the Charlo brothers or maybe move up to 168 and take on, of course, the immortal, the one pound-for-pound king in boxing right now, the man, of course, that commands all the money. I'm talking about Canelo Alvarez. Of course, he's going to go in May against Billy Joe Saunders. The undercard, we'll talk about that a little bit later. The UFC Fight Pass card for the April 23rd, that's been canceled. Heather Hardy, I think it was an all-female card, but Heather Hardy had some COVID issues or some training issues, some injuries. Anyway, her and Jessica Karma have been put off, I believe, until sometime in May. The same thing goes for DAZN's broadcast April 23rd of Jaime Munguia, the former WBO 154-pound title holder, now campaigning at middleweight, supposed to take on Maisie Sulecki. That fight's not going to happen. There was something on. One of those guys got hurt, but the bottom line is it's still going to happen. They're going to reschedule it. And, of course, the 24th, pound for pound, maybe the best fighter in all of Mexico, Emmanuel Navarrete, once-beaten fighter, former WBO 122-pound champion, now moved up to 126 pounds. Of course, he's a guy at 126 for the WBO. He's got a great record. He's got lots of knockouts. He can fight. He's got an attitude. And he sort of boxes like a Mexican Hector Camacho or a Mexican a black guy. He's got he moves around. Not your traditional Mexican fighter where he comes with his, you know, chin down and his head up and that kind of goes, nah. Bottom line is this guy can really fight. We'll see where he goes. But the bottom line is Emmanuel Navarrete gonna defend against Christopher Diaz. That's on the same card with knockout artist, Mr. First Round himself, 16-0, 16 first round knockouts, Edgar Berlanga from Puerto Rico. You know what's gonna happen to him, right? Eventually, all the big guys that punch, they all get whacked. For some reason, knockout artists get knocked out eventually. Eventually. Will it happen this time? I don't know, but I guess what? This guy will last longer in the first round. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide, of course, WBC Boxing TV. After the break, we'll bring in a man that he sort of blueprinted the knockout of Mike Tyson. Talk about the man that brought Buster Douglas to prominence. Coach John Johnson, his manager, next on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC Boxing TV.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Interesting tune, Down to the Nightclub. When I was in Columbus, Ohio, I spent a lot of time in nightclubs. Bottom line is we bring in the king of Columbus. I'm talking about the man that, of course, engineered the knockout of Mike Tyson, the meltdown of Mike Tyson in Tokyo, Japan. I'm talking about John Johnson, the manager of Buster Douglas. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great, my man. I'm breathing great.
I know. Yeah, so how's the comeback doing?
I'm breathing great. It's the most important thing.
So, all right, so tell me about this comeback. You had a spot of lung cancer. What happened?
I advise everyone, please, anyone's ever smoked, which I did, and say he's over 50 years old or 60 at the oldest, to go get a low-dose CAT scan of their chest. And fortunately, actually, I had just done a stress test and did great on it, because I've always been a runner. But my heart specialist advised me to, this has been a couple of years ago, go see a pulmonologist because I had smoked and stuff, and I did. And she recommended a CAT scan, and I got it. And the first year, nothing showed up. And the second year, it did. It was like a small nodule, they call it. And they waited 3 months, did another scan, and it was growing. So then they knew it was cancer, and fortunately I had this fantastic surgeon, his name is Dr. Robert Merritt at the James Cancer Center down at Ohio State, and 40 years old, he's had a thoracic surgery at the James Cancer Hospital, before that Stanford, but and he's a brother too.
No, I like how you slid that in there. I mean, that was cute.
That's a great accomplishment. You know, we're honoring him this summer at our 42-1 event. He's being honored. Okay. When I met with him, he said, "What do you suggest?" He said, "I say we go in and cut it out." So he took the upper right lobe of my lung plus some other, lymph nodes, mm-hmm. about 30 of them, and he got it all, and go back May the 1st. It's been 2 years. Mm-hmm. It was April 1st, and get my next CAT scan, and you always sweat that it's going to come back, but, it's something you got to do, and I want to believe that he's going to say to me again, "Coach, you're cancer free."
Right on.
And the amazing thing is, I spent 33 days in the hospital because my lung wouldn't heal.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning, God love him, he'd come in that room with a big smile on his face and he'd say, "Coach, your lung's going to heal. I promise you it's going to heal." And 33 days later, he came in and said, "Coach, you got to go home."
I was sweating it there a little bit, Coach.
I was sweating a little bit there. Yeah.
When you look back at the Buster Douglas Mike Tyson fight, when Buster went down like that, did you think he wasn't going to get up? Because in the past he had been known for not showing the most tremendous and incredible amount of intestinal fortitude. Some people thought he dogged out of a couple of fights. Were you questioning him when he went down there?
Well, when he got hit, he fell back towards our corner, and I didn't see the punch that landed. It was an uppercut. And when he hit the floor, my first thought was, no matter what, I'm proud of him. You know, that was in the eighth round. He'd been kicking his butt, And then when he turned over and hit his fist, his glove against the floor, I knew it was all right. And then when he got up, right at the bell, when he came over and sat down, I started yelling as loud as I could yell. You could hear me all over that arena. It seated 60,000. There's about 35,000 there. And the Japanese people, they were stone quiet because of what was been happening.
They were in shock.
Yeah, they were shocked, you know. And I started yelling, you know, he's going to come like hell. You understand? He's going to come like hell. And he did. And Mike come out and actually caught him with a good shot, and then you know, Buster turned things around. And May always said that the ninth round was the best round that he had seen in boxing. But,
What were you thinking? Round one, he comes back and he's won round one, and like he's a 40-1 underdog, and I know he's your guy and this kind of stuff, but he's won a few rounds now. What were you thinking?
Well, I remember saying at the end of the fourth round, I said, you've won all four rounds, just stay in control. And Larry, the great commentator, the greatest, I think, Larry Merchant, he made the statement. He said, John Johnson, Buster's manager, just told him that he's won all four rounds, and unbelievably, I agree. You know, and so, you know, we tried to stay in control, and we had a fight plan that was just, it was perfect. I mean, we stayed right down the middle on him and tied him up on the inside and moved a lot and beat him up, you know.
Larry talks fondly about you. He does.
Yeah.
Larry and I talk, and he talks to John Johnson. He's always got good things to say about you.
I appreciate that. I have the same way with him. I do think, from an analysis standpoint, you know, after the fight, he was the best, you know, to talk about what happened. And he was so poetic, you know.
April 15th, 1985, I'm at the Hagler-Hearns fight. The fight's over with. We're in the sports pavilion afterwards at the press conference. And this guy walks up to me. It's Larry Merchant. All right. He walks up to me and goes, could you believe that kid? And that began our thing. We're still like rocking and rolling like 36 years later.
I can hear him saying that.
You know,
he was a kid.
Yeah. And his wife is Patricia Stitch Merchant. She's a wonderful lady, a former television actress, a nice lady. And they're moving. They're going to move to the beach. So he's going to downsize from his little mansion in Santa Monica to an apartment. He's talking about that. So that means he's going to have an estate sale. I'm going down.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an estate sale you want to go to. Larry Merchant's?
Yeah, he'll have a lot of interesting stuff, that's for sure.
Yeah. Question for you. These guys are getting bigger. They just came up with a bridge weight division. I'll have a question for the WBC president a little bit later, Mauricio Sulaimán. But should there be a cap on the heavyweight division? In other words, suppose some guy comes around and he's 350 pounds or 400 pounds and he's a giant. Should he be allowed to box in today's heavyweight division?
Yeah, I think, you know, that new – I think it's, you know, that the 224
– 224?
Yeah, that's kind of a needed thing because you have, and I'm proud of the fact that I think, and I honestly can't think of his name right now, but the young kid from Toledo, Ohio, heavyweight, I think he's the best young American heavyweight I've seen in many, many years. You know, he's really, really good. But he's about 6'5", 6'6", 240. They're big. I mean, my kid, I had a kid that was fought in the, you know, as a heavyweight, as an amateur, but he's 6'2", you know, 215 and so on, and we're moving him down to cruiserweight because he's just too small to fight. Now, he might move up after fighting as a cruiserweight to that 224
range
people, but, you know, he's never going to be a big heavyweight. Those guys are just getting bigger and bigger, and they're athletic, and they're technically they're doing great things with them, you know. I just love Tyson Fury. Yeah. I love him. I love him as a person first. What a great person. You know, he gave away $9 million, his entire purse for the homeless people. Man, that says a lot.
You and I reach out for the homeless. In fact, I tell you, both Coach Johnson and myself do. When we see people, man, we drop them a nickel. And we want to talk about $5 because guess what? You can't drop anybody a buck anymore, Coach. It don't go nowhere. I mean, what do you give them a buck for? They can't even buy a soda with a dollar.
So
anyway, the guy you were talking about is Jared Anderson, right? From Toledo?
Yeah, he's from Toledo. Yeah.
9-0, 9 knockouts.
He's a great fighter. My kid spars with him. His trainer, my trainer of the kid I've got from Cleveland, was his trainer's trainer. And so they work with each other a lot. And, it, of course, it's great work for my kid because he's really good. Hey, I mean, like I said, I can't think of an American heavyweight that can compare to that kid, in a long, long time.
Okay. You remember the times we would have fun in Columbus, Ohio? We'd promote those shows in Columbus after Buster won the title. You were promoting those shows. What was that pizza place I used to fall in love with that had that cut the pizza in squares? Donati's?
Massey's and Carsoni's both. Donato's, too.
Donato's. That was it. Donato's. That was the one where I used to bring my friends to. I'll put it. Remember,
Always had a lot of friends. A
lot of female friends in Columbus, Coach.
Yeah. I know you was a star, man.
Oh,
you
were, don't say that, Coach. Don't say that.
There's
supposed to maybe some potential girlfriends are listening. They hear about my past. I'm in trouble.
Yeah, cool looking Latino guy. You know.
Coach, how's the wife and the kids?
They're doing great. We've all. I've got my shots, and my wife's got her shots, and my kids are getting theirs, and now my goal is to see my grandkids get a great start in life, you know.
Yep. Who was the guy that I almost kicked the snot out of, or kicked the spit out of with an H? That was Buster's trainer. Remember, I went after him in Kansas City.
He claimed to be his trainer.
I bought him
as a cut man. His name was John Russell.
John Russell. I remember he talked all that smack about me on Peyton Scherer's answering machine, and then Peyton played the message for me, so I listened to it. So then I went to see him in Kansas City. He was sitting with Floyd Patterson. I said, "Mother Ducker, get up." And Floyd said, "Me?" I said, no, not him. He goes, so Floyd gets up and gets out of the way, and then Floyd tells me about 3 hours later in the elevator, he goes, "Young man, I knew you were dead serious when you reached across the table and made a swipe at him." Because I swiped at him. In other words, I'd get up. Anyway, he wouldn't get up, but he wasn't talking any smack or spit with an H after that.
Yeah, well, you would have probably had to get in line for guys that would have liked to kick his butt, because, he's one of those people who had a little bit of success and then looked down, like he's more important than other people. And that's not right. So
I know, but
I always resented the fact that he said he was Buster's trainer. J.D. McCauley, who got loving, he passed away.
Yep, the barbecue guy.
Yeah, he was his trainer. Okay,
now real quick before I let you go, that was remember he used to bring us food during the offices, and that sort of led to Buster getting fat.
Yeah, he was fat.
Okay, I will leave it at that. I will leave it at that. Kiss the wife, say hello to the son. We'll talk soon.
All right, love you, buddy. Thank you.
The great
Bye-bye.
John Johnson, the man that pulled off the upset of the century, knocking out Mike Tyson, melting down Iron Mike Tyson in Tokyo, 1990. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Oh, you're too mad.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I'll be right. You going to run the one more?
5:30.
Ray Leonard ran me into the ground, folks. Sugar Ray Leonard, the fastest runner I've ever seen in my entire life. I think he could outrun Carl Lewis. I kid you not. We were running together one morning, and he said to me, "Are you ready, Pedro?" And I said, "Yeah, after 3 miles, I was ready to stop, okay?" And then he took off, and he ran a half mile, and he was a blur. The van that was following us, it disappeared from sight. That's how fast he was rolling over the grade. I kid you not, Sugar Ray Leonard. Anyway, Ray Charles Leonard. Somebody sent me a thing saying that Zab Judah wants to come back. He wants to do another fight with, he doesn't want to do another fight with Koshyzu. Koshyzu's retired, of course, a kid from down there in Australia. They hooked it up the first time, November 1st, 2003. I was there. I'll never forget that. Of course, Zab Judah took the stool and tried to hit the referee, Jay Nady, over the head or something like that. Of course, the fight was stopped. I mean, Zab was knocked out. And then later that night, some girl was looking for Zab Judah. You know where Zab's at? You know where Zab's at? No, I don't know where Zab's at. I said, why do you need to know Zab? I want, he gave me a counterfeit $100 bill. He gave her, she was a hooker. He gave her a counterfeit $100. I kid you not. So she's looking for him. The same time that night, Suge Knight is like dogging me. Suge Knight, the head of Death Row Records, the guy that's in jail for the rest of his life. Hopefully. And Suge, I didn't say that really. Just my Pedro, the alter ego, said that. But anyway, Suge Knight, he's like dogging me. He's calling me on the phone. He's like, hey man, call me back. Call me back. We're in Vegas. Call me back. I don't want to call the guy back. The guy's like bad news. I mean, no doubt about it, right? So he wants to get into boxing. He thinks that I'm going to be his key in the boxing. He sees me hanging out with Larry Merchant, people like that. He says, this guy's connected. He's dark. He's brown. I may got an insight there, so I'll move on him. Anyway, he made a move on me. I was like frightened. Suge Knight's calling me on the phone. I never called him back. Bottom line is, he went to jail soon thereafter. And now he's in jail again for running some. I saw him run that guy over. Like, he ran some guy over. And then he backed over him. He ran over him one time, and then he backed over him again. So he deserves all the jail time he's ever going to get. Mr. Suge Knight was a good football player at one point in time, but he's a piece of work as a human being. No doubt about that. Now, enough of that. Hour number two of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Of course, we'll bring in the WBC president, Mauricio Suleiman. We'll ask him about, you know, all the legends coming back and maybe some of these fraudulent fights. Because last night, Ben Askren and Jake Paul, that's not a fight, but it was on pay-per-view. That means suckers paid for it. Pay-per-view. You should have been paid to watch that, not paid to... Yeah, they should have paid you money, like called you on the phone, give you 20 bucks to watch this fight, because it wasn't a fight. It lasted 91 seconds. So what did you expect? A guy that never picked up a pair of boxing gloves before in his life is going to fight a guy that's a hobo to begin with, Jake Paul? Bottom line is, at the end of the day, Snoop Doggy Dogg trying to get his world, get into the way of boxing, I guess, the world of boxing. You are tuned to Ring Talk, live worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Of course, we come to you live on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio Channel 217. Stay tuned. Hour number two of Ring Talk and WBC TV after the news.